while ago I was on a flight, or getting ready to join a flight in Istanbul. And I was in the waiting area, sort of scanning the crowd that was building to get onto this flight to Central Asia. And nearly everyone was Central Asian. And so one guy got my attention because he was taller than everyone else, had sort of silver hair, really spiky, trying to be younger than he was, clearly. Leather jacket, big sort of biker's motto on the back, big boots. I said, yeah, this is really interesting. I'm starting to think, you know, what on earth is this guy doing going to Central Asia? Anyway, I got on the plane. Turns out I'm sitting next to him. Now, you know, the missionary story would be 10,000 feet. We start talking, you know, all of that, talking about Jesus. By the time we're at cruising altitude, he's gloriously saved. That never happens to me, just so you know. In fact, generally, I don't talk to people on planes. Some of you are looking really shocked. What do you mean you don't talk to people on planes? So planes are about the only place where people can't get to me. So I love flying. But I love flying because it's like my peace and quiet, right? Aluminium tube, 40,000 feet. No one can call me. No one can get me by email. It is bliss. And I'm sitting next to this guy. And I couldn't help myself. So what are you going to Central Asia for? And he sort of looked at me. Big, nervous sigh. And says, I'm going to meet a woman. I was like, interesting. And he starts telling me this story, how he was from New Zealand. He met a woman from this Central Asian country online. They'd got to know each other over a period of about 9 months. And this guy was going from New Zealand to Central Asia to meet this woman for the first time to, and I quote, get married and build a new life. He'd spent $30,000, most of his savings. He quit his job. I mean, he was all in for a woman that he'd never met, you know, in the flesh. It's extraordinary how we will take risks for things that we really want. I mean, this guy, he had left it all behind. He was all in. So being the pastorally sensitive soul that I am, I said, what happens if it doesn't work out? And he was like, it'll be fine. So, you know, we chatted some more. We got into Central Asia, and at the sort of visa point, you know, we sort of parted. And I've often wondered what happened to him. You know, what was the end of that story? But it is extraordinary how we will take risks for things that we really want. You think about the boundaries that he was crossing, the risks he was taking to go after something that he really wanted. And of course, we're the same. If we really want something, we will take all kinds of risks to get there. I work with some extraordinary people who are taking risks all the time, not for their own benefit, but in service of other people. That same country that I visited, there is a group of people led by one young woman who are facing the daily reality of domestic violence in this country. So this is a country where in almost every apartment block, every single day, a guy will come back home drunk and beat up his wife or his children or both. This is just everyday life for loads of people, and the government don't want anyone to know about it because it's embarrassing and they won't do anything about it. And there is a small group of young adults in this country facing this head on at great risk to themselves, the risk of angry men coming after them and attacking them, the risk of government officials coming after them because they don't want news of this epidemic of domestic violence getting out. And there's a small group of young leaders who are saying, enough. Taking all kinds of risks for something that's important. And I could tell you story after story of young leaders like that who are crossing boundaries and taking risks to demonstrate and communicate the good news about Jesus. And they are Mark 5 Christians. Let's read together. One verse from Mark chapter 4, and then the first 20 verses of Mark 5. Mark 4, 35, Jesus says this. That day when evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Chapter 5, verse 1. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tomb to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. Imagine the strength needed to do that. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission. And evil spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus didn't let him, but said, "Go to your family, tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed. So Jesus has announced to the disciples that they're going to the other side, and the disciples have gone, "Oh no, not there." The other side is the place of difference, the place that we don't like, the place of difficulty and challenge, where we feel awkward, where we feel like we don't fit, maybe where we feel threatened and fearful. And Jesus has told the disciples and taken them to the other side, which is Gentile territory for these Jews. And the imagery here in Mark is staggering, isn't it? It's just about the most unclean situation for a Jew you can imagine. It's Roman territory. There was Roman occupation, of course, and this part particularly had been occupied probably for 100 years. So this was proper hardcore Roman territory. Not only that, but they kept pigs for pets. For a Jew, of course, that's terrible. And then on top of that, they come across this guy who is effectively as close to death as you can be while still being alive. And he's in a graveyard. And all of this is unclean for Jews, right? This is a terrible place to be if you're a Jew. And Jesus has led them here. And here's a man with an evil spirit in a desperate, hopeless state. All human efforts to contain him have failed. He has superhuman strength. And Mark explains that it's the result of being demonized. Can you put yourself in the shoes of the disciples? Can you imagine how you would feel if you're in that place encountering this man? It's pretty awkward, isn't it? It's pretty difficult. Now, I'm guessing some of us read a story like this and think, this is primitive understanding, right? The talk of demons and this kind of thing, it's primitive interpretation of something that we now understand scientifically or maybe medically. Well, I think we need to be careful about that. If there is a personal God who is good, it makes sense that there is personal evil as well. Evil tears apart at what God wants to be together. Minds and bodies, relationships, community, creation itself. The Bible is clear that evil is not the only cause of problems, but that there is real, powerful, personal evil at work in the world. And in this case, this man's predicament is because he is demonized. That's why human efforts to control him have failed. There is something else at work, something more powerful at work here. And despite his hopelessness and his desperation, he still recognizes the power of Jesus, which is why he cries out, Son of the Most High God. And Jesus does something unique. There is lots and lots of historical documents that record exorcism around the time of Jesus. People would appeal to a higher power to deal with a spiritual problem. It's happened all the time. And look what Jesus says. He doesn't appeal to a higher power. He simply uses two words. He says, come out. Jesus has no one else to appeal to. He is the higher power. So he simply says, come out. And it happens with two words. This dead man walking is set free. Two words from Jesus. And in the life of this man, evil is defeated. I've seen this happen. Not often, but I have seen it happen. I was in Poland some years ago doing an evangelistic mission, and we had a team, we had musicians, all kinds of folks with us, and we were setting up in a new place, and everything that could go wrong was going wrong, inexplicably. I mean, it was unbelievable. One of the band almost got electrocuted, half the team got sick suddenly. I just felt such hard work, and there was no obvious explanation. It was just a struggle. And we kind of went through the plan for the evening. I preached. And at the end, a girl, she was about 16, came to find me. And she said, I have voices in my head. And they keep me awake. And I can't get rid of them. Can Jesus help me? And, you know, we talked some more. And it was pretty clear to us that this was spiritual. Okay? And it's not always. So I don't want anyone to hear me say every issue that we ever face is spiritual. It's not. But this was. So we explained what Jesus has done for her. And there and then, she gave her life to Jesus. Next day, we're all back in the same place. And the door at the back opens. And this girl walks in, looking visibly different. Dressed differently. all the black clothes had gone. Face beaming. She comes running down the front to find us, and she says, "Last night I slept for the first time in years. Jesus has done this for me." It's the power of Jesus. No higher power, because Jesus is the ultimate power. Come out. And this man, and almost 2,000 years later, this girl in Poland and many others are set free by the power of Jesus. So evil is real. It sometimes takes hold of people and starts to destroy them. And sometimes it is the power of Jesus, and only the power of Jesus, that can set people free. And what is true personally is also true structurally. There is structural evil as well. You see this at a national level sometimes, where regimes control and coerce groups of people. We've seen it on our news screens, time and time again, where people with power use their power to oppress and persecute, usually minorities, including murdering thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands. That is evil. And some of that doesn't change without the power of Christ, because it is evil at its root. And we have to take it seriously. What is going on in Moldova is evil. And we need to be clear-headed about this. And it needs to cause us to pray and to act, both and, in response. But confident that we follow Jesus, who is the ultimate power. So we don't need to be afraid. We need to be sober-minded, but we don't need to be afraid, because Jesus is the ultimate power. You may be wondering about the pigs. What is the deal with the pigs? Some of you are like, "Poor little pigs. It's really sad. I like pigs." Back then, they weren't thinking, "Poor little pigs." They were thinking, "There goes my business. There goes my livelihood." If you're a teenager and it was your dad who owned the pigs, you're going, "There goes my inheritance. This is a disaster with the pigs." But what's going on with the pigs? As you can imagine, lots of people have spent far too much time theorizing about the pigs. A lot of ink being spilled on the pigs. It's actually very simple. First of all, it's a demonstration of the fact that Jesus is much more powerful. Okay, so the fact that all these pigs were impacted by what was in this man shows the power of the evil, but more importantly, shows the power of Jesus to deal with the evil. So that's the first thing. Thousands of evil spirits, legion, for they were many. Two words, they're defeated. The pigs sail over the cliff, number one. Number two, people are much more important than pigs. The end. In a little while after this was written, Jesus would not only demonstrate again that people are more important than pigs, but he would defeat evil once and for all. He would be bound. He would be naked. He would be alone outside a city, not unlike this man that they're encountering on the other side. And that's what Mark's doing. He's getting the readers to think about what's coming next. Jesus would be cut and bleeding. He would be in a tomb. But he would be doing this willingly, because that was the cost of defeating evil once and for all. This is how Paul summarized it in Colossians. Having disarmed the powers and authorities, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross. Because people are more important than pigs. And Jesus has triumphed, evil is defeated, and he now calls his people, including us, to follow him, to cross boundaries, and to take risks, and sometimes to pay a heavy price here and now, to demonstrate that evil is defeated, and to help people experience the triumph that has been won on the cross. That is our calling. It's here. You don't need a special word from Jesus. You don't need someone to walk over to you and say, this is for you. It's for all of us, because it's here. It's part of our calling. The only question is, how do we each live this out? So how are you doing on this? How are you doing on crossing boundaries to defeat evil in the name of Jesus? Could be in school, where someone is victimized because they're in the minority, or they're different to someone else. And so they get picked on relentlessly. And they get damaged. And it needs someone else, a follower of Jesus, to say, I'm going to cross to the other side and I'm going to stand with this person. Maybe it's in the workplace where someone's being harassed and bullied by a boss who thinks it doesn't matter and they can get away with it. And it needs someone to cross to the other side and say, enough. This must stop. Maybe it's from one part of a community or a city to another. From the places where there's a lot to the places where there's less or nothing. I live in Oxford, and people hear of Oxford and they think dreaming spires and university, and of course that's part of the story. Here's the other part of the story. 1 in 4 children in child poverty. It's outrageous. And it needs people to say, that is not okay, and we're going to cross from one side to the other to get involved. Because people are more important than pigs. And it's part of our calling. It's what God asks us to do. And you don't need to go 1,000 miles and cross cultures, although sometimes God asks us to do that. Most of the time it's where we are. And some of you are doing this, and this morning is simply to remind you that you follow the God who is the ultimate power. So when it's hard, and sometimes it's really hard, it's where we need to go back to. Right? We follow the God who has ultimately dealt with evil already. But there is some mopping up to do. And sometimes in the mopping up, we get hurt. There are no guarantees yet that we don't get hurt in the process. I have on my phone a secure messaging app that means I can connect with our staff in the most difficult context in which we're working. And when this thing pings, there's a little bit of me every time that kind of goes, like, what's coming? You know, has someone been hurt? Has someone been thrown into prison? No guarantees yet. The guarantee is what's coming. Right, we've sung about it this morning. But whatever you're involved in, you can be confident because you follow the ultimate authority. You can say, come out, and it's done. And maybe for some of you, this is a challenge to take a new step, a new direction, to cross a boundary that you've not crossed before. Maybe a boundary that you're already thinking about it. You know, God's kind of going, and you're like, I don't like it. It's difficult. I'm going to feel really awkward. It's not where I feel comfortable. All true. All true. So what do? Do you stay comfortable? Or do you cross? Knowing that God is with you. Think of this man and the change in his life. And you know the God who can do that. You have the message of the gospel that is still setting people free. This church exists to demonstrate and communicate that message. That's why you're here. As you go out this week into all the places where you'll be, school, university, home, local community, workplaces, know that you're going with a mandate to stand against evil wherever it presents itself. And that you go with the power of the one who died and rose again and who says, come out. And it's done. That is the God that we serve. And he asks us, calls us to be his agents in the world. I was with someone this week who came in to spend a few days with us in Oxford from Latvia. And we were talking about all kinds of issues. And one of the things he said was that he often wonders why God sort of decides to use people like us, you know, because we're pretty fallible and get it wrong a lot of the time. And we were talking about it. And at one point he said, you know, it's just really clear that God has chosen to do this because it's in this process that we also get changed. And I've been thinking about that ever since. And of course he's right. That as we step out, God also does stuff in us. So if you're here this morning and you're feeling like faith's a bit like, nah. And in a room of this size, there's going to be some of us who are just feeling that. The last thing you need to do is kind of get all in on yourself. Probably the best thing to do is take some action and step out. Do something in service of someone else and watch God show up. Because he always shows up when we step out. And especially when we take some risks and cross some boundaries. So maybe some of you just need to do that. Crack on.